Welcome to the Saturday Frights Podcast. I am the Projectionist, your co-host for this radio program. Now, come, join your host, Vic Sage, as we enter the vault to once again discuss retro horror films and television programs.
It's no good, Projectionist. It definitely looks like two of the three pumps are out of commission.
Did Rockford J use those pods I had sent down from storage?
No, he just tossed them in the floodwaters, and we all waved at them as they sunk to the bottom of the vault. Of course he used them, man. Hold up a second. Okay, I'll tell him. Rockford says that it definitely looks like there are bone fragments in the inner workings of the pumps. They are burned out. I'm sorry about that, Projectionist. I didn't mean to snap like that. We've just been working through most of the night. I'm a little tired.
So, that only leaves us with the one pump that is operational. Instruct Clay and Steel to aid Rockford J in moving the generators and remaining pump to level 14. I believe I can call in some favors from Haddonfield to secure replacements.
Okay, I'll let them know. Those cracks in the walls down here on level 16 are looking pretty rough.
Just count your blessing that the haunted drive-in is not completely underwater at the moment. We will concern ourselves with repair when we have finally banished this unnatural weather over our heads.
Hold on, Projectionist. Clay says that we have run out of those metal containers to store all of the bones that are floating on these floodwaters. What did you call them?
The casks of La Grande.
Yeah, these bones seem to be coming up to the surface of the water quicker and quicker. Security has been working on 12-hour shifts, Projectionist, scooping them out of the water and dumping them in those casks you provided.
That is impossible, Victor. The incantations I placed on each of them should allow for continuous storage until the end of time.
There are lots of things of late that are impossible, including a raging storm that refuses to move from over the drive-in for 2 months, or even the fact that those casks, which are filled with skulls and other bones, now seem to be emitting some kind of chant.
What?
Yeah. It seems to be getting louder and louder, and your back teeth ache if you listen too long.
By the all-consuming embrace of Ron Tegath, is there no end to these travails we must endure? To err on the side of caution, Sage, tell security to roll all of the casks into the floodwaters. That should at least limit any of the staff from being affected by that chanting you have mentioned.
Will do, man. Hey, maybe we need to think about canceling the podcast. There is so much we need to worry about at the moment.
Far too late, dear boy. The recording light is on. Let Rockford J take over and report to the control room at once.
Okay, on my way.
Hello again, dear listeners. I'm afraid the deluge of rain has continued over our beloved haunted drive-in. My research has uncovered nothing, and the floodwaters continue to rise, threatening to overtake the vault level by level. Do not let Victor or the other staff of the vault know that I said this. But I fear we are going to reach the point where I must construct a crude portal and abandon this home of so many years.
Lonely to your draw. Come home, come home, home, home. Just say you will, say you will.
There, old girl. Let us hope it does not come to that. Yes?
Hey there, listeners. Sorry I'm late. Projectionist, was the haunted drive-in just playing Jackie Wilson's Lonely Teardrops?
Oh, I do not know, Victor. I was busy explaining to the dear listeners that we have a very special Saturday Frights radio broadcast for this evening. We are going to be discussing the classic science fiction horror picture from 1962, King Kong vs. Godzilla.
Very funny, man. Listeners, the projectionist is pulling your leg. He totally knows we're going to be covering the just recently released Godzilla vs. Kong.
Would you deny there is not at least one scene in this new picture inspired by the 1962 clash between that giant ape and radioactive dinosaur?
Well, you're correct, and this is the part in the podcast where I remind you that since this film has just been released to both HBO Max as well as in theaters, we are not going with full spoilers.
What is there to spoil, dear boy? Two enormous monsters face...
They are kaiju, my friend. The term is kaiju.
It's a big monkey and dinosaur with atomic breath. They fight, people die... End of this radio broadcast.
Oh, boy, this is going to be a fun episode. Can you just roll the clip?
We have to take it. We need Kong.
The world needs him.
Stop what's coming.
And this child, she's the only one he'll communicate with.
I knew that they had a bond. She had nowhere to go, so I made a promise to protect her. And I think that in some way, Kong did the same. Godzilla.
Listeners, I realize that of late, we have been turning our attention to quite a few recent releases. So, on this episode, as I've already said, we are not going to be diving into full spoilers. Just in case, some of you are lucky enough to experience the film on the big screen at your local cinema. Although, I'm sure the majority of you listening to the podcast have already had the pleasure of seeing it for yourself, thanks to HBO Max.
Which is why I have argued, dear listeners, that we should discuss the film in full.
Yeah, sorry, projectionist. I just can't make myself do that. However, I will admit that we are going to be treading on some minor spoiler territory, although most of what we're going to be talking about will be things that you can deduce for yourself from the trailers. Before we really start to dive into Godzilla vs. Kong, however, I want to say that, thanks to my co-host here, most of our co-workers were invited to a very special screening of the film. And it felt appropriate to see this movie on the big screen. We followed safety protocols, but the audience reaction to certain scenes in the movie made it even more enjoyable.
Are you referring to your rather curious reaction while watching the picture, Sage?
No. I think we should move on to our thoughts on the...
Oh, I am most positive that our listening audience would love to hear how you behaved in the auditorium.
I don't think we need to slow down the episode.
Nonsense! Dear listeners, with a film like Godzilla vs. Kong, it is understandable that for each audience member, there is one of the... kaiju they are hoping will prove to be the victor. As is evident in the preview trailers for the picture, both Kong and Godzilla are quite happy to roar their challenges to one another before the fists and atomic breath start flying. Please imagine my surprise then, as well as some of the audience, when Kong first encounters Godzilla, and Victor here begins to beat his chest in imitation of the giant ape.
Hey, I love gorillas, okay? And I have a long history with King Kong. I was excited to see this first battle between the two titans.
I believe it was JT from Acquisitions that remarked, seeing you behave that way was worth the price of a ticket, yes.
Yeah. Friends, if you are worried that director Adam Wingard pulls a fast one in the movie by not crowning one of the Titans the victor by the end of the film, you need not worry. I do think, though, that Wingard pulled off something rather tricky, as I'm sure both Godzilla and Kong fans will be more than pleased with how everything plays out. At least, I know I was. I think I should add that Godzilla vs. Kong is, at the end of the day, just one heck of a thrill ride. This latest, and possibly last entry, in Legendary Pictures' Monsterverse is a whole lot of fun, and probably the perfect thing we movie lovers need at this time. I suppose we should describe it as a big old popcorn flick. It has been 58 years since those iconic kaiju last faced off against each other in King Kong vs. Godzilla. And thanks to the pandemic, we had to wait an extra year. But I can honestly say, the brawls between Kong and Godzilla are totally worth the wait.
Indeed. Although, I believe you ended up enjoying it a tad more than I, dear boy. The suspension of disbelief asked of the audience was a bit tough for me to digest at times, but I cannot deny that I walked out of the auditorium with a smile on my face.
The movie is like 7 minutes shy of being 2 hours, but it sure didn't feel that long to me, and I've watched it twice now. Projectionist, after the movie, when you headed back to your study, some of us had a nice discussion about things we liked and were curious about. For example, there are some elements that were set up at the end of Godzilla, King of the Monsters, that aren't exactly addressed in this latest film. Personally, I feel there's probably about an hour missing from this film, at least. All of it relating to the human protagonists.
That is what I was just referring to a moment ago, Victor. There is very little development with the majority of the characters. They feel as if they are to act as exposition dumps to take us to the next scene, so we are one step closer to a fight between Godzilla and Kong.
Well, man, no one is buying a ticket to this movie for the human characters. But you obviously have a point. In fact, one of the things that Michael Dougherty's Godzilla King of the Monsters from 2019 was heavily criticized for was the humans in the movie. Critics are paid to be critical, though. Personally, when all is said and done, I feel that Godzilla, King of the Monsters, is the superior film because of the human characters.
Really?
Absolutely, my friend. A lot of that has to do with the scientific organization that was hinted at in 2014's Godzilla, called Monarch, which, thanks to graphic novels, novelizations, a website, as well as 2017's Kong, Skull Island, and of course, 2019's Godzilla King of the Monsters, this organization has been given a very interesting backstory.
Please tell me you do not plan on delving into the backstory on this broadcast.
I had thought about going into it pretty deeply, but I won't subject any of you to that. Just from the films alone, though, Monarch, as a global organization, has a slew of outposts all over the world. Their goal has been to study the reappearance of what they call Titans, ancient kaiju who have remained dormant and hidden away from the world until they rise up and walk the earth again, answering the call of King Ghidorah in the 2019 film. By the end of Godzilla King of the Monsters, our favorite atomic breath-breathing kaiju has proven that he is the Alpha Titan, and the other titans like Rodan and others literally bow down to Godzilla in submission as he roars his triumph, all of the titans standing in the rubble of what was once Boston, Massachusetts. And as the credits roll, we get to see newspaper clippings, online reports and the like that this organization is not only releasing what they've learned from over the past 60 years about the titans to the public, but that it seems like the reappearance of the titans are having a positive effect on the environment and the world at large, which is what the character of Dr. Emma Russell, played by The Conjuring's Vera Farmiga, states in the movie. Quote, the mass extinction we feared has already begun, and we are the cause. We are the infection. But like all living organisms, the Earth has unleashed a fever to fight this infection. Its original and rightful rulers, the Titans. They are part of the Earth's natural defense system, a way to protect the planet to maintain its balance. End quote.
I thought you said you weren't going to dive into the history of this monarch organization. That balance, however, is only true, Victor. With Godzilla acting as the king of the monsters, eh? And even then, look at all of the loss of human life when these giant creatures make an appearance.
As was absolutely proven when King Ghidorah was in charge. In fact, during those credits, if you freeze one of the reports, a headline reads, Godzilla keeps Titans in check. And it says that Godzilla is defending cities from some of the other Titans. But these reports, at the end of the movie, lead into what we knew was coming. The eventual face-off between Kong, who you will remember is on Skull Island, and thus was kept out of the events of the 2019 film. Although, that credit sequence seemed to suggest that some Titans were being drawn towards Skull Island. Which, some fans thought that perhaps this all meant battle lines were being drawn for the upcoming clash between Godzilla and Kong. That it would result in an epic war between monsters until only one was left standing. Forgive that nerdy dive into the lore of the movies, and this setup for Godzilla vs. Kong, listeners. But beyond some new kaiju, and of course Godzilla and Kong, those from the previous film are not mentioned.
I do not believe that is totally correct, Sage. What about the opening credits sequence with the list of defeated creatures?
You're quite correct. The opening credits are designed to catch anyone up with the basic story of the MonsterVerse, including footage from previous films and even audio recordings. And before we get to the Godzilla vs. Kong title, we do see almost, well, like a brackets list of titans that both Kong and Godzilla have defeated. This ties into what I was talking about, though. Beyond some of the known kaijus that were killed in the previous films, what does defeated mean? Is Rodan dead? Or did Godzilla just knock him around and put him in his place off-screen? Since these opening credits appear to be reports from Monarch, as a fan of the lore of the MonsterVerse, I couldn't help but wish that it was made a little more clear. Of course, perhaps they will tackle the subject in the graphic novels that act as a prequel to the film, or even the novelization. I'm not sure. But that is one of the things that stood out for me. In addition to, well, in hindsight, I do wish they would have included more characters from Godzilla King of the Monsters. I know this will be a slight spoiler, but what happened to the character of Dr. Emma Russell? There is a nod to her in this film, but we aren't privy to her fate. Was she arrested for her actions in the previous film? Is she working with Monarch still? What about the eco-terrorists headed up by Charles Dance's character of Alan Jonah, last seen purchasing a scavenged head of the slain King Ghidorah? Now, it's true that Millie Bobby Brown makes her return as Madison Russell, as does Kyle Chandler as her father Mark, but in all honesty, with his amount of screen time, it amounts to little more than a cameo.
Are you so sure you enjoyed Godzilla vs. Kong as much as you claim you did?
Yes, projectionist, it's a lot of fun, and it's very good. I'm just pointing out a few things that I wish had been done a little differently. And yet again, especially in regards to the story arc for both Millie Bobby Brown's character and Kyle Chandler's, there seems to have been quite a bit left on the cutting room floor. In addition, it is rumored that Zhang Zi, who played twin sisters Dr. Eileen Chen and Dr. Ling Chen in Godzilla King of the Monsters, were set to return for Godzilla vs. Kong, but that her scenes were cut, as well as the scenes with Underwater's Jessica Henwick.
Perhaps Adam Wingard and screenwriters Eric Pearson, as well as Max Borenstein, felt the majority of the picture should revolve around how Godzilla and Kong are able to cross paths. Yes.
I'm sure you're right, and I really hope it doesn't sound like I'm dogging the movie. That is totally not my intent, friends. One thing is for sure, as the film opens, things have definitely changed since we last laid eyes on Skull Island. One of the arguments that fans of the MonsterVerse had with a battle between Godzilla and Kong was the fact that the latter was quite a bit smaller than his opponent. That was explained rather quickly by the filmmakers of Kong Skull Island. Kong wasn't fully grown in 1973, when Monarch makes first contact with the Titan. Although the research on the island does point to something that ties into both Godzilla King of the Monsters as well as Godzilla vs. Kong, that Skull Island is connected to the Hollow Earth, and that Kong's ancestors most likely acted as guardians meant to stop the spread of the likes of the Skull Crawlers from escaping said island. If I remember correctly, it is revealed that 5 years have passed since Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and the beginning of Godzilla vs. Kong. Skull Island appears to now be subject to continuous and violent thunderstorms. So much so that Kong has been enclosed in an outpost by Monarch. Through high-tech means, it is meant to mimic the lush jungle he has grown up in.
Kong is not a dumb brute. He knows he is for all purposes imprisoned, and it is plainly obvious that he is not happy about it.
Not in the least, although he does have a friend as well as a protector, by way of Kaylee Hutley, who plays Gia, a deaf and mute Iwe native child who's been adopted by Rebecca Hall's character of Dr. Eileen Andrews, who works with Monarch as an anthropological linguist. Gia is the last surviving the natives we first met back in Kong Skull Island. It seems this punishing storm has killed all of the other natives and presumably everything on Skull Island but Kong with massive floods. Now, as some pop culture sites have pointed out, is the storm due to King Ghidorah and the way he was mucking up weather in the 2019 film? It's not made clear, but it seems to be a likely answer.
The massive Monarch outpost serves another important function than just studying the behavior of Kong, dear listeners. It masks the giant ape from Godzilla. What with cave paintings and other archaeological finds from the other films pointing to a coming War of the Titans, everyone at Monarch believes it is best to keep Kong and Godzilla far apart as possible.
Yeah, and as we quickly learn, perhaps Godzilla isn't the savior of mankind that we once thought. After the opening credits, we are introduced to a new character named Bernie Heise, played by Brian Tyree Henry. Bernie happens to be a podcaster and something of a conspiracy theorist, whose show, by the way, is listened to by Millie Bobby Brown's Madison Russell. It turns out that Bernie is working at a high-tech research laboratory known as Apex Cybernetics, located in Pensacola, Florida. The company is a global juggernaut with offices around the world and led by Walter Simmons, played by The Hateful Eight's Demian Bashir. While Simmons' goal is to better humanity through technology, and especially protect them from what he sees is the greatest threat to mankind, the Titans, Bernie thinks something is going down at the lab, and is planning on finding proof and blowing the whistle.
Bernie Heise is not what you would describe as being a successful corporate spy. Although, as is proven throughout the film, he does excel in plain dumb luck, such as the case of his entering a highly guarded area at Apex Cybernetics. A perfect time for Godzilla to make an appearance, yes?
Friends, it's a little jarring to watch Godzilla, who I think most fans see as a protector these days, just go ballistic on the research laboratory in Florida. Although, it does have the effect of letting Bernie escape in the confusion with some bizarre information he downloaded from one of the Apex computers. This attack takes the world by surprise. In fact, Madison learns about it in school as a special report is played on the TV in her classroom.
Did you take notice of all the kaiju posters on display in that classroom, Victor?
I did, man. I think that Adam Wingard and the rest of the filmmakers did a very good job of giving us glimpses throughout the movie of how Godzilla and the other Titans have changed the way of life in the Monsterverse, for good or for ill.
It would seem it is quite a bit of the latter in Madison Russell's case, as she goes to speak to her father, who appears to be in charge of Monarch's relief efforts, on the recent and unprovoked attack by Godzilla. It is a conversation that does not go as Madison intended.
just like in the trailer. While Madison is trying to get her father to see this attack, makes no sense. Mark Russell points out that at the moment, they need to focus on what they can do to help the people caught in Godzilla's path. It probably won't surprise you to learn that the young woman, perhaps demonstrating some of the headstrong aspects of her mother, decides, along with a friend, Josh Valentine, played by Hunt for the Wilder People's Julian Dennison, that they need to go find Bernie, who Madison is able to find out, thanks to his blog posts and of course the podcast, that he does live in Florida. He was there at Ground Zero when the Apex Laboratory was attacked, and together they will attempt to get to the bottom of Godzilla's bizarre behavior.
Madison Russell is intent on clearing Godzilla's name, as it were. Even if the attempt might put her companions and herself in harm's way.
Absolutely. I think this is the perfect time to point out that the vast majority of the humor in this film comes from this trio of characters and their investigation. Which leads us to our third party, Dr. Nathan Lind, a former Monarch geologist who quit the organization after a disastrous attempt to explore the Hollow Earth from an entry point in Antarctica. The character, by the way, is played by True Blood's Alexander Skarsgård.
In addition, he portrayed John Clayton, Lord Greystoke, or simply Tarzan, in 2016's The Legend of Tarzan. An overlooked gem if you are a fan of the pulp character by Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Agreed, projectionist. Dr. Lind finds himself being recruited by Walter Simmons to lead a new expedition into the Hollow Earth, where the entrepreneur fully believes there is not only a power source that will aid humanity in the long run, but he assumes Dr. Lind will be interested in this new expedition as a chance to prove that his theory that the Hollow Earth is where all Titan life originated.
Dr. Nathan Lind is understandably reluctant to attempt another expedition, however, especially with the loss of his brother from the previous attempt. But his curiosity is piqued when Walter Simmons explains they have designed a state-of-the-art flying craft that can withstand the unique gravity issues of the Hollow Earth.
Along with Walter Simmons is a young man named Ren Serizawa, played by Lupin III's Shun Aguri. While he is the chief technology officer for Apex, he has a very important connection to the MonsterVerse. His character is the son of Dr. Ishiro Serizawa, a chief scientist for Monarch and who was portrayed in the previous legendary produced Godzilla films by the iconic Ken Watanabe. In fact, I found an interview with Aguri online from an article on Collider, where the actor talked about how his character felt about Dr. Serizawa. Quote, his father was very occupied solving world problems with Godzilla, and he did sort of follow into his father's footsteps, but he doesn't believe he was heard by his father. In general, he is a character who wants to protect the Earth, and that is his goal in general. I think the means to get to the goal is a little bit different from everyone else and his father. End quote. I'll be sure to link that article on the podcast post on the Pop Culture Retrorama site, but beware, it contains massive spoilers, so you might not want to check it out until after you've seen the movie.
But who or what can help this proposed expedition once they get to the Hollow Earth?
Exactly. Nathan thinks their best bet is for Kong to basically act as a guide. The doctor has a theory that the genetic makeup in all Titans calls them to each of their individual, well, homes for a lack of better word. To say nothing of the fact that Kong could protect the expedition if they come under attack. The main issue for Lind is how to convince Dr. Eileen Andrews to allow Kong to be transported to the Monarch outpost in Antarctica. But after visiting Skull Island and basically pointing out that this might be the only option in finding a way to stop Godzilla, who does kind of look like he's gone rogue, Dr. Andrews agrees.
Much to the disappointment of dear little Gina.
Well, Skull Island is home for her and Kong. At least the only one she has known. But along with her mother, they begin to transport Kong from Skull Island by boat, with the protection of battleships from the US Navy.
Remind me again, dear boy, what was believed might happen if Kong were to leave Skull Island.
That Godzilla would sense a contender to his title of King of the Monsters and come after Kong, who is not having a good time, we should add. Apparently, they drugged the kaiju, and he wakes up on the ship, chained to the vessel, which is heartbreaking for Gia, obviously. Kong is her friend, and he seems to be intent on protecting the child. While trying to calm her friend down at one point on the voyage, Gia reveals that Kong is even smarter than Dr. Andrews thought. He has learned sign language from them.
Although Gia would seem to be the only human he is willing to communicate with.
Sure, but considering how he's been treated by other adults, even those with good intentions at Monarch, do you blame him for being wary? We ought to mention that there is an unexpected addition to the mission with Maya Simmons, played by Baby Driver's Isaac Gonzalez. The character is the daughter, of course, to Walter Simmons. She's there to make sure that Apex's interests are being properly served.
They are bankrolling the expedition, after all.
Of course, as you've seen in all the trailers, Dr. Andrews' concerns about removing Kong from Skull Island are quite correct. And before you know it, the bell is being rung for the first fight between Godzilla and Kong. And let me add that the fight sequences in this film are spectacular. You can really feel each hit, bite, or blast of atomic breath. The only thing missing is perhaps a fight commentator calling out the shots for each of the kaiju fighters.
The property damage throughout the picture is astounding, dear listeners.
Adam Wingard definitely delivers on the action, which I've read online that his main mandate from Warner Brothers and Legendary was to show the audience things they haven't seen before in a Godzilla or Kong film. The movie goes above and beyond. In particular, the Hong Kong scenes that you've been given a glimpse at in the trailers. It's just an absolutely beautiful looking movie. Definitely not a bad showing for what is the 36th Godzilla movie and 12th for King Kong.
Agreed. It is most assuredly a visual feast. And the cast are... What the deuce? Who would have the audacity to interrupt our radio broadcast? Hello?
Projectionist, Vic. I'm sorry to interrupt the podcast, but the west side wall of level 16 just crumbled.
Are you guys okay?
It will take more than a single wall failing to pose a true threat to the haunted drive-in. I will be down after we have finished with this special radio broadcast, Rockford J.
Projectionist, I say this with all respect. Shut up.
How dare you speak to me that way, you...
Vic, in the walls are dozens of rune stones.
What?
Yeah, man. These are runes carved into bones. Clay and Steel are keeping the security team away, but there's definitely something very, very wrong with these things.
Rockford, get everyone out of there immediately.
No! Destroy them, Rockford J. Obliterate them at once!
Ha! I thought you might say that, Projectionist. That's why I'm contacting you from level 13. We borrowed a little something left over by the plague rats when they built this place under the haunted drive-in.
What are you gonna do, Rockford?
Fire in the hole!
Rockford, come in! Rockford!
We're okay, Vic, yeah. Ears are ringing a little.
Did it, dear boy. The rain clouds have vanished and the sun is shining.
Way to go, Rockford! Absolutely, Haunted Drive-In. I think you said it the best. Rockford, my friend, you need to come on up here and look at how beautiful everything is outside.
Indeed, Rockford J. You have saved the haunted drive-in, dear boy.
Thanks, Vic. And Projectionist. Just doing my job. I'll see you guys a bit later after I check on the structural damage to level 16.
Okay, you be safe, man.
Indeed.
Will do. Good luck with the rest of the podcast.
Well, wonders never cease, dear listeners. I believe we should cease the radio broadcast, Victor. I need to head down into the vault and make sure all is safe.
Sounds like a plan, Projectionist. Friends, if Godzilla vs. Kong turns out to be the concluding chapter of Legendary's Monsterverse, I think it's a fitting end. Do yourself a favor and take time to see the movie for yourself. Thank you, as always, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to the show. The music you heard at the beginning and ending of our podcast was provided by Peachy. My co-host, The Projectionist, has his own Facebook page, Projectionist Haunted Drive-In. He manages to share interesting trivia on films on a daily basis, or sometimes just vintage movie posters and behind-the-scene photographs of some of your favorite films. I want to thank Rockford J, not just for saving the Haunted Drive-In, but for putting up with the abuse of the Projectionist on a nearly daily basis. I couldn't keep a lid on the vault without his hard work. As for myself, you can still find me posting on not just the Saturday Frights Facebook page, but the Diary of an Arcade Employee page too. Saturday Frights has an Instagram account, by the way. If you want to check it out, you can find it. It's simply Saturday_Frights. If you'd like to contact me with suggestions for future episodes, you can reach me at vicsagepopculture@gmail.com. For all things pop culture and retro-related, feel free to visit us at the Pop Culture Retrorama site. Of course, we owe a great deal of gratitude to the Retroist, not just for originally hosting the podcast, but for allowing us for nearly 10 years to share our love of all things retro. If you like the show, consider subscribing and giving us a rating over on iTunes. We are available on Google Podcasts, Spotify, as well as Stitcher, and we appreciate the help in finding new listeners. This has been a Pop Culture Retrorama podcast. Goodbye, and thanks for listening. The Saturday Frights podcast is not affiliated with or authorized by any of the businesses and individuals that have been mentioned in the show. All music and sound clips are the property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Audio clips are included for the purpose of review, criticism, and commentary only, and are not intended to infringe.